Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
She's an MBA carrying wife and mother, consultant by day, author, speaker, and encourager by night. Having lived all over the U.S. and experienced many facets of life, she's constantly learning to embrace change by studying others' successes. She's your change hacker and radio host, Melissa Ruth, coming to you from Houston, Texas, on the Coach on Fire Network. Here's Melissa Ruth.
Hello, everyone. I am Melissa Ruth, joining you from Houston, Texas, as you already heard. If you're joining us today, welcome to the Change Hackers, mastering change in all areas of life. I'm so excited today. First of all, it's Memorial Day, so that means we get one day off, most of us. And it's one of my favorite holiday weekends because many of my family are veterans. So thank you to all who have served. Also, I'm so excited because the guest today is someone I've been looking forward to interviewing for some time. So first, I thought I'd share a little bit about who I am and what this show is, because we had some technical difficulties on the last show. I wanted to make sure that you knew who I was. So I am here today, a mother of three, married to my husband, David, for 21 years. And we have encountered a lot of change over those 21 years. We've moved multiple times. We've had multiple careers. So now I'm a software consultant by day. I help companies all over the world best utilize this complicated and very powerful software just to manage their information. I get to travel around the world. I get to work with some of the brightest people, and that's awesome. I love my job. I am also a published author and public speaker and now radio host. And the reason for that is because I'm passionate about helping others learn to not only embrace their lives fully, but really to become victorious in all areas of our lives. So if you're interested in more about me, my books, my information is all at chooseyourviking.com. But enough about me. Let's talk about my guest, who I'm so excited to introduce you to. My guest, Debbie Montgomery Johnson, has had to deal with a lot of change, most of it unexpected. And we're going to talk to her today about how she muddled through some of that change and came out on top. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to the show.
Hey there. How are you? I'm so excited to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. And I assume there in Florida that it's beautiful and sunny. You get to have some fun this weekend.
It's lovely. And actually, I'm getting ready after we're done. I'm going to play golf with my husband in preparation for a tournament tomorrow. He wants me to practice.
That's awesome. I do not have the patience for golf, but there are many that do. So that is great. That'll be a great weekend adventure.
So I'm Debbie, looking forward to it.
Go ahead.
No, I said I'm looking forward to being with him and just spending some time together.
For sure. So many people here don't know who you are, and I thought maybe we'd take a few minutes to share who you are now. And I want to preface that for my guests to say, look, before Debbie shares a lot, I want to point out there's a positive outcome from her stories and her experiences. So make sure you stay tuned, because that's the whole point of the show, is to learn how do we respond to change in a successful way. So Debbie, let's start with what life is for you now. Who is Debbie, the woman behind the smile?
Well, life right now is absolutely fantastic, and I feel like I'm the woman with the smile. And it's interesting, I'm turning 59 this year, and a lot of people don't want to say their ages, but I feel better now than I think I felt in almost my whole life. I am a newlywed. I got married a little over a year ago, and I have four wonderful children, three of them married with three grandchildren, which are the love of my life. My parents are in their 80s and healthy, actually just moving back to Florida in another month or two. So I'm in that middle zone. You know, I kind of feel like the fluff in the Oreo, the icing in the Oreo, where you're you're there for your kids and your grandkids, but you're also there for your parents. So talk about change. But it's very exciting, and I'm in a really good place right now, and that makes me very happy.
Awesome. But so let's talk a little bit about that. You got here through lots of different changes in your life. So let's talk about the first big change in your life. Can you explain a little bit what life was like then, and then the change that came? Go ahead.
Well, I'm assuming that you're talking about 7 years ago when I lost Lou. I'd been married for almost 26 years. My kids at the time were between the ages of 15 and 23. I had one still left at home. I was actually working, talk about career changes. I think I'd had four or five in my lifetime, which I really enjoyed and benefited from. But at the time, I was working as a treasurer in the Palm Beach County school system. Lou was home. He had retired from the Air Force early. He left the Air Force about 16 years. And he had started a company called benfotiamine.net. He manufactures a vitamin supplement good for neuropathy, which is typically experienced by diabetics and folks with chemotherapy. So Lou was home all day long running this company. I was off at the school board doing my thing. And at the end of the year, and it was actually April 8th, 2010, I was at a meeting and I got a phone call. Actually, my phone blew up with messages, and I got a call from my oldest son, who was 23, and all it said was, "Mom, Dad just died.
Wow.
I'm coming home to take care of everything." So that was that was an immediate change that threw my life into chaos initially, because, you know, I'd gone from a working mother of four to now a single widowed working mother of four. And it was something I hadn't planned for, really. Although I'm a big preparation person. I've always prepared for events in the future. I had all our paperwork together. Insurance plans had been planned. But Lou didn't really follow my lead in a lot of things. And 2 months before, now granted, he was not ill. He had a sudden heart attack. He wasn't in the best of shape all the time. It was a shock. But the biggest shock was 2 months before he died, he got mad because his life insurance premium went from $100 a month to $500 a month, and he refused to pay it. So he canceled our life insurance. After
30 years,
he decided to cancel our life insurance. And at that point, I did not like contention. So I just kind of said, "You do what you got to do, honey. You know, take care of me and the kids somehow, but do what you got to do." And he canceled the life insurance. And when he died, I was sitting there going, "So now what do I do?" You know, I had a company which I didn't know how to run, and I don't know how I was going to do it. But God bless me, and fortunately the company was a good company, and I was smart, and I had a lot of resources and a lot of people I could call, and they helped me through that period, that 6 month period of, you know, now what do I do? Because it was difficult, and I always like to pay bills, my bills on time. I wanted to get out of debt my whole life. I wanted to get myself out of debt, and I was getting there. And I remember the very first time I missed a payment on one of his credit cards because he didn't have it set up, and it really annoyed me because I got charged a ridiculous fee, and they changed the rate from something very low to something very high, and I'm thinking, this is not right. I have paid my bills, you know, consistently for all these years, and I'm late one time. And
not even a situation,
this.
Right? Yeah.
It wasn't on purpose. So I did my best, and I got some money together, and I paid that thing off and canceled it.
You're not going to take me. That's it.
There you go. Yep. I was not going to be taken by them because I had been in banking for a lot of years, and I'm thinking, this is not right. So there was my biggest change, is that I was responsible for not only my bills, but whatever he had incurred for the company. And I had to figure all that out. And that was a life changer.
Sure.
But I did it. But I did it.
Well, you did it. And during that time, I know you and I have talked about this. There was a time where it was just a matter of struggling to get up in the morning, just get up and do what you got to do, right?
It was, and there were mornings when I just wanted to pull the covers over my head and just say, "World, go away," but I couldn't, because for 2 years after Lou died, I was working my school board job. I'd leave at the house at 6 in the morning and get home around 1:30, 2 o'clock. And then from 2 until 2 a.m., like 12-hour period, I would be working the business because I had to learn it. I had to keep customers ready. And honestly, I didn't want to go to bed at night because I was home by myself and in that big king-size bed all by myself. And that change in itself is huge because you're – it's quiet then, and that's when all the emotions hit you and you realize that, dang, I am alone now, and what am I going to do? It's very scary sometimes, so you don't want to go to bed, which leads to could lead to depression, could lead to not wanting to get up in the morning because you're exhausted, and, you know, if you don't eat right and take care of yourself, that's a very, very difficult time.
And you're alone because your kids have their own lives, they're doing their own things, so you find yourself being busy, busy, busy to fill that void, right?
Right. My three older kids were gone. You know, two are military pilots and they were in flight school. And my daughter was finishing up college and getting ready to get married. So I only had my 15-year-old home who was very involved in football and his own things. And so, and I thought very self-sufficient. So, you know, I was doing my stuff and I'm probably, you know, I look back and you can't shoulda, coulda yourselves to death. But there are times that I wish now that I had spent more time with my 15-year-old who is now 23 and is living some consequences of things that he did because I wasn't there for him. Now, he has a different story. He'll tell you that they were all his choices. But as a mom, you want to help you want to protect your kids from everything. And you can't. Sometimes they just have to make choices and live the consequences.
That's right. So as we continue to talk about your story, I forgot that this is a live show. So anybody who would like to call in with questions for Debbie, the number is 646-716-7979. And I will see you in the studio and be able to call you out so you can ask your questions. That having been said, Debbie, we've talked about that now. You've got the shock of your husband having passed. He was your husband for 26 years. I've been married for 21 years. I imagine there are things that you do because you've gotten into a pattern, as my mother-in-law says, you've trained him or he's trained you, right? So you've learned how to do that. Now you've got to learn how to live alone, and there's a void there. So how did you fill that? Or did you even realize there was a void?
I don't think I realized it because I was running on adrenaline and anticipation of having to get things done and sometimes just running on worry because Lou didn't write a lot of things down as far as running the business and I had to ask people. I remember I was sitting here one morning and I was looking up at his picture just saying, honey, you know, you have to help me. You have to give me this password. You have to tell me how to do something. And that was the most frustrating thing for me because I recall a couple of years before he died, one of our largest wholesale customers called him and I would happen to be sitting right here. And he said, Lou, what happens with the business if you die? And Lou looks at me and he's on the phone. He goes, well, of course, Deb's going to run it. And I'm looking at him like, are you out of your mind? Unless you write something down or you show me how to do this, I will have no idea how to do things.
Wow.
And wouldn't you know, that's exactly what happened. He wrote down a 4-page continuity plan, which gave me some of the key. It certainly wasn't enough for me to keep running the business. So, you know, thank goodness I'd had a lot of really good training when I was younger. I had been a paralegal when I got out of college, and then I went into the Air Force, and I had a whole lot of management training. And then when I worked for the bank, I had some great financial training. So I could rely on those careers to run my own business, thank goodness, because if I didn't have any of that, I would have just floundered, and it would have died at that point along with him. So
that. We haven't talked much about the company, but the company, as you said, it provides a valuable service. So those people are dependent upon that supplement, right? So it's not something
you want
to leave. Yeah.
I don't want it to go away. I mean, we have thousands of customers, and the most extraordinary thing is my father, who's a retired doctor, works for me. He's going to be 88 this year. And I feel like I have to carry on the legacy for Lou, but also, you know, provide a great opportunity for my dad because he talks to customers all day long. It keeps him so engaged, which is amazing for a parent, a grandparent, great grandparent, to be so involved. But he does it because he's helping me. He wants to help me make my life easier as a father. That's wonderful. But it is solidified our relationship because we talk every day, multiple times during the day, about business, about who he's talking to. I mean, he knows so much about the company, which is marvelous. But he was there for me personally. He and Mom were there for me personally throughout all of rubbish that went on after Lou died. So that brings up a good point.
I think when we lose a spouse or even a loved one, we have a tendency to kind of dive into a hole, if you will, or curl up in a corner and just be with ourselves. And sometimes that's good, but sometimes that opens us up, right?
Absolutely. And the hardest part is that as soon as someone dies, especially if they die suddenly, it's so unexpected, your house is bombarded with people. I mean, I remember we had so much food, and it was just Matthew and me here. We had enough food for a year. My mom put it in bags in the freezers, and I mean, I was overwhelmed with people for about 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden, people go back to their own lives, and you're left here looking at that empty chair and saying, well, now what do I do? You know, or you're looking at your bed that the sheets don't move at night except on your side, and you go, so now what do I do? And thank goodness for my mother and dad. And actually, they were there from the beginning because Lou had been traveling. He drove his race car, or took his race car to the west coast of Florida to get it tuned up so that he could go to a big race in Miami. And my mom and dad lived about a half an hour from where he died. So they were there when I got the call. They got the call. And then they took care of everything on the west side of Florida. And actually, I never saw Lou after he left home the day before. So that was another thing for me and the kids to deal with, is that we never really had closure in saying goodbye because we never saw Lou after he left. So for me, it was almost, we were both in the Air Force, and it reminded me of when he would go away on a, what we call a TDY, a temporary duty. And I just felt like he went on that TDY and kept forgetting to call home. And I saw that way for many, many, many months. It was just very unsettling for many, many months. So I don't wish that on anybody, but, you know, you just have to draw your faith together and say, okay, Heavenly Father, you know, help me to get through this one, because you can't do it by yourself. It's not possible to do it by yourself.
Even though that's generally the first reaction. So that's definitely true. So
you want to rely on yourself.
Yeah, you do.
No, so you want to rely on yourself, but you just don't. You don't have it in you when you've gone through that shock, because you're probably not eating right. You're probably not sleeping right. I know I wasn't. And then I was trying to be perfect. I wanted to be the strong one for everybody else. And that's when you just lose it. You just, your body just physically and mentally wants to say, I'm done. But you can't, especially if you have children that you're taking care of and a company to run.
Right. That's very true. So a couple of years later, or was, what would you say, a year later, you started to kind of climb out of that a little bit?
Well, 6 months into it, my friends called me up, or they'd come over to see me, and they were like, Deb, you've got to get a life. And of course, I thought I had a life. You know, I was very, very busy. And they said, no, you need something other than work. And so they said I needed to start dating. And I laughed because I didn't really enjoy dating when I was young. It was okay, but I was so self-conscious, and I just felt awkward when I was 16. And so I didn't like it then. And I'm like, I really don't want to do it at 52, you guys. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't go out to parties and stuff like that. I'm a lot of fun, but I just don't do that kind of stuff. And in my mind, that's how you dated, or that's how you would find someone. And so they said, oh, no, you know, you can do it from the safety of your home. You can start online dating. And I didn't know too much about it. I did have a couple of friends that had met their husbands through online dating. So I figured, well, let's try it. You know, I'm sitting here. I can do what I can do. But in my mind, I was thinking, okay, if you're going to do that, you got to get over all your insecurities, and you have to look perfect. You have to have the perfect profile, the perfect things you say, you know, tell them who you are, because you come with what I consider baggage, but it was my family, you know, which is not baggage, but it's life. But I wanted it to project in a great manner, you know? And so I did that.
The best
and I tried
of who you are.
By myself. The best, which is what we do. We always try to put the best out there because we're always comparing ourselves to the best of everybody else. You know,
right.
That's what Facebook is about and all these social medias is you're not seeing the bad stuff people are living through. You're only seeing their happy times. So that's
right.
The assumption I went under was that, okay, let's put my happy pictures up and we'll go from here. And so I kind of dipped my toe in. I went to some faith-based online dating sites that I thought would be safe, and I put my profile out there, and I just kind of stalked, and, you know, there's those little flirt buttons or whatever. It's been a few years, so I don't really remember it exactly. But I would reach out, and then I'd get things back from guys, and I realized that they didn't write very well. I don't know if it's, you know, grammar and 55-year-olds is just not there. I was not getting what I wanted out of the responses from the men online. And the
is that
too,
all there I is? I mean, really?
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, I'm destined to be single. You know? I mean, I've been, again, well-trained, well-educated, and I'm not a snob in that respect, but I do like a guy to write better than a fifth grader.
Right.
It was just kind of interesting to watch. And then I was contacted by this really handsome man from London. He was an international businessman from London, and he had lost his wife a few years ago, had a young son, and his name is Eric. And Eric started to write to me, and I love to write. So Eric and I, he was actually in Houston at the time and had just gotten a job to go over to Malaysia. So we were writing constantly. I mean, it became an online relationship that we would write to each other 2, 3, 4 hours a night, which was great for me.
Wow.
Because I'd be home alone and I could write to him wherever he was in the world. We were on Yahoo chat and I could instant message him and it would be like we were holding a conversation and it was wonderful. And the most amazing thing is that I had an online journal. So I would copy and paste all of our conversations, everything, into my journal, and then every 6 months I would actually publish, have it put into print so that I would have family history for my kids showing our relationship as we dated, because of course, you know, it got to the point where he was coming over, we were going to raise our families together and, you know, live life ever after. So he and I would be there writing every day, all day long for 2 years. And shortly into it, I understand business, and sometimes you don't get paid for your services until you deliver the products. So
right.
I got that part. And he was over in Malaysia and working to move hardwood trees, lots of lumber, from Malaysia into India. Well, it was very interesting, but I had some investments in hardwood trees down in Costa Rica. So I understood exactly what he was doing. And so at times he would say, Deb, you know, I've run into a snag with customs. I run into a, you know, tariff with so-and-so. I mean, there are a lot of business things that were going on and he had a lot of snags. And because he wasn't getting paid until the end, he asked me to help him, which
right.
I did a little bit at a time, a little bit. You know, I started off little. And then over time, because he had become such a part of my life, it was almost like I was helping my husband or my business partner, which, of course, I would do. The only difference
right.
is that I had not met Eric in person, but he had become my partner. You know, he made my heart flutter. He was my life. And
right.
it was extraordinary how that happened over those 2 years. Just extraordinary.
And you would come home and you would be excited. Today we're going to chat. And, you know, it's just like if you were coming home to dinner, except you were coming home to a computer, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny because on Yahoo chat, there's a little bell. And I felt like it's almost like Pavlov's dogs. You know, I could hear that ding, ding, ding. And I would race across the house and just be so excited that we were going to connect for the day. It was extraordinary. And some days he didn't have good internet service and we'd get disconnected and it was a real letdown. So when he came back on, you know, you'd have these ups and downs. But most of them were up. It's really, I recall it being like when you first fall in love as a kid and just that genuine heart beating through your chest and butterflies and all that. It was extraordinary. But he listened to me. And that was the most amazing thing is that I could put out my heart to him, my sorrows, everything that happened in my 26 years of marriage, he and I talked about, because I realized by not wanting any contention with Lou, there were a lot of things that I stuffed inside. And I always thought that I would die of an ulcer rather than anything else because I internalized my feelings. And by talking with Eric or writing to Eric, I was able to verbalize it, well, in writing, all my feelings, and that healed me from the inside out. I didn't realize this at the time, but, you know, I've been able to look back at it. And it was the most amazing experience for me. And I became part of his family because I would be writing to his sister and his son in London at the same time writing to him in Hong Kong and maybe writing to his attorney who would be traveling, you know, if something would come up. So it was an extraordinary experience. Until...
Until two years. You know, I talk about that, and nobody here knows, unless they know me from outside of the show, that, you know, my husband and I met on bulletin boards, and I always lovingly call it the internet. My husband always lovingly corrects me, not the internet, it was before that. But my point being, I always feel like, you know, 6 months of online communication, you tend to go deeper than you do in person. Or maybe it's just my personality style. But David knew me better than guys who had known me for 2 or 3 years.
I totally agree with you, because for me to verbalize something in person, I never could have divulged my feelings the way I did in writing.
Right.
I just wouldn't have done that. I'm very private, and I wouldn't have done that.
Which is a good warning, right, to anybody listening. It's very easy to get to feel like you're a lot closer with someone who's online just because that barrier isn't there.
Exactly. Exactly. And you feel it's almost the anonymity that allows you to do that. Even though you get to know them very well, you know, you haven't seen them for the most part. And it's easy to do. It's just easy to get caught up in writing. And it's so expressive to just let your heart out. And I mean, my journals are extraordinary. Looking back at them now, they're just extraordinary. And some are very hard to read. But they did lead me to be able to write my book, which I published last year. But yeah, it was an extraordinary adventure. So there is a place for online dating. There's definitely a place for it. It's just you need to have the boundaries for it as we go forward.
And the knowledge, right? Yeah, the knowledge that that they only show what they want to show. And we'll talk about that very quickly here. But in case you were just tuning in, you are listening to Change Hackers, where we're trying to learn to master change in all areas of life. We're here on Coach on Fire Radio. And I am Melissa Ruth, the host, and we're with Debbie Montgomery Johnson, the woman behind the smile. She talked about her book just a little bit, but we'll talk about how to find that book here shortly. So we've talked about you found him. He was great. It was 2 years online. You obviously were attached and emotionally attached for sure, and your heart was attached. So what happened 2 years into that?
Well, one morning, it was September 10th, he came on. I remember that. It's crazy because it's the day before, you know, 9/11, not the same year, but it was we were going to remember 9/11 the next day. And everybody talks about terrorism and things that were going on. So you're very conscious of what's happening overseas. Well, he came online that morning and he wrote and said, "Deb, how do you feel about forgiveness?" And I thought that was an interesting topic, although we, you know, in the 2 years, we've had some very spiritual conversations about everything, about life, death, kids, you name it. And so when he asked me about that, I put on my spiritual hat, my scriptural hat, and I said, you know, we talked for hours. And this is where you really put your money where your mouth is, because, you know, we talked, he asked questions, I gave him answers, he kept pursuing, and I was like, is there something that I did wrong? Because at that point, I'm looking at me going, what did I do? You know,
why are you asking about forgiveness? Do I need to forgive you?
Did I do something? And then the terrible thing happens. We got disconnected for a few hours. So here I am doing about it. Yeah, going, okay, so now what? Did I give him the right answers? Did I not? And when he came back on. Yeah, exactly. He came back on, and he said, do you remember what we were talking about? And I said, sure I do. He goes, rehash it. Tell me what you said. And I'm like, what is going on here? And he said, Deb, I have to confess something. And at that point, my radar just went up, and I got this sick feeling in my stomach, because the only time I'd ever heard I have to confess something was when my husband many years before said that to me, and I didn't like what happened after that. So when
sure.
Eric said this, I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, I'm going to hurt you, and I'm so sorry, but I have to confess this has all been a scam.
Oh, my.
And immediately, I remember I just felt like my whole 2 years with Eric suddenly got ripped out from underneath me. And I'm writing to him. I'm like, you're lying to me. What is wrong? Are you sick? And I said, you got to prove that this is a scam. Can you imagine? I wanted him to prove it now. He said, I'm going to come on live. I'm like, live what? He said, on Yahoo chat, there's a camera and I can come on live and we'll talk. And I'm thinking, okay, show me how to do this. Cause here I was, I was pretty much a novice to social stuff like that. So he came on, he showed me how to do it, and I'm expecting to see this, tall, dark, handsome guy from London. And on my screen comes this dark-haired, dark guy, dark-haired, dark-skinned young man and with a big smile on his face. And I'm like, what the heck? And he's like, hey, Deb, how are you doing? Can we keep this going? And I'm looking at him like, are you out of your freaking mind? And, he's like, is it because I'm black? And I'm looking at him thinking, well, no, probably not. I said, you lied to me for 2 years.
Right.
You took over $1 million from me over 2 years.
Wow.
And you want to keep this going? But
I gotta ask, did he say, but will you forgive me?
Yeah, that's all he wanted. He wanted me to forgive him because he had fallen. He had fallen in love with me, and he wanted to be sure that I would forgive him. And I don't know if it's because he had some sort of spiritual awakening or he felt something was going to happen to him and, God's going to get to him if he doesn't get my forgiveness. I don't know what his motives were. Pollyanna here, I'm still thinking that it was, why does a scammer confess? He must have had feelings, genuine feelings for me. How could he not after 2 years of hearing my whole heart poured out to him?
Right.
But I looked at him and I say, have you done this before? And he said, yes. And I said, you have to stop. Because he'd never done it for 2 years and he'd never done it for as much money. But I'm like, you have to stop. You are hurting people. You are hurting women, their hearts. And it's wrong. And
lifetime
I have to hope that, oh my gosh, I have to hope that he felt that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I will never know, although I met someone from Nigeria a couple of months ago. It was one of Desiree Lee's boyfriend. And
oh, okay.
I looked at the guy's picture. He's from Nigeria, and he was so hurt by what had happened because here I was taken so badly by a man from Nigeria, and he goes, Deb, I will find him for you. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure I want you to find him. I don't know what I would do.
Wow.
I don't have any vengeful feelings. I don't have any malice. I mean, I have hurt because of what he did, but I don't want him to hurt anybody else. And that's the biggest takeaway is that organization, those scammers, they are so manipulative and so good at what they do that they can hurt millions and millions of people, and there's very little way that they can be stopped, and that's what makes me angry.
I've heard on a previous interview you talked about taking all of this information to the FBI. So how did that go? I mean, you had this book, you've been keeping the journal. I know you had said at one point that you took a picture of a picture with your cell phone of his picture. So where did that go?
Well, I called my parents because in this whole thing, I'd gotten my parents involved. And so they came over immediately because they were waiting for him to come here too. And there's no way, my father said, 2 years, there's no way this could be a scam. And so they came over, we went to the FBI, walked in with like 4,000 pages of journal and a 3-inch, three-ring notebook with all my transfers and all the IP addresses and all the banking information. And the FBI were, honestly, they'd never seen anything like that. They'd never seen documentation like that. And they asked where he was. And I said that as far as I know, he was in Nigeria. And they were like, Deb, we are really sorry, but there's nothing we can do to help you. Unless you get him here to the States, there's nothing we can do. And
wow.
At that point, I died. And they're like, you're the victim. Do not feel like you're responsible. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be a victim, but I can't. I was so ashamed. I felt guilty. I felt stupid. And I'm thinking, here I was, a banker and an Air Force intelligence officer, you know, had legal background, and I got taken. So
right.
That's the most amazing thing, is any of us can be taken by somebody. And that's the story, because I've only had a few people that have come to me in the last few years and said, that was really dumb. You shouldn't have done that. And I'm looking at them going, have you not ever had anybody take advantage of you? You know, especially when you're in a vulnerable position of being, you know, your husband died suddenly, you got thrown into running a company, you're working with finances that you didn't, you know, really have the training to do. And I was by myself. And it happens. It just happens. And nobody wants to talk about it. And the one thing the FBI told me about Palm Beach County is that there are more men than women who have been scammed for over $1 million.
And more men.
More men than women. And I can guarantee you that not one of those men is going to tell. They're never going to tell their story. And I'm actually speaking in Palm Beach on the 5th of June at a club over there. And I told the event planner about the FBI saying that. So she's going out to all of her men customers to say, you've got to come hear this story. Because it's not just a woman's thing.
Right.
It's a man thing, because scammers can put anybody's picture up on that internet. Doesn't matter. It could be
right.
Some pretty blonde woman or a pretty brunette woman. And, you know, I could not tell that Eric was overseas from Nigeria. Now, when I talked to him, I heard his British accent. So that reinforced that I'm okay. I'm talking to my Brit. But, you know, they have British accents in Nigeria. So if you're talking to a really lovely woman, she's probably been hired or she's part of that group. I mean, you can be scammed by anybody. So I sat
down.
That
is true.
And I didn't tell my story for many, many years, except to my parents. And I tried to recover. I kept the company going, but I could sure use that $1 million in the bank account now, because I'm trying to grow my company. So
right.
The takeaway there is, don't use your business as your ATM machine. You know, I love that, because I'm a S Corp owner. I have, you know, the money is basically mine, my company. I can use it. And you got to have a team of people there to surround yourself. I mean, surround yourself with people that are honest, trustworthy, that can help you. You know, when I'm sending out a big wire to Malaysia, why didn't someone stop me? I mean, I was too smart. I knew my way around the banking system, and I probably was too smart for my own good there.
Right.
And when they did try to question me at the bank, I'd go to a different bank. I was good at that. But I would love to go train bankers to say, hey, you know, look for these things. Look, you know, if someone's sending large amounts of money to Indonesia or Malaysia, that kind of stuff, the first time's fine. The second time, you might kind of question it. The third time, I would definitely have said, yo, do you
right.
know this person? Show us that you know this
right.
person, because we're trying to protect you, not them. Because after the fact, bank was like, well, not our responsibility. You did it. They've shut down those bank accounts now, and we've got nothing to do with it. And
right.
there's got to be, you know, there are a lot of older folks here and young folks that are being scammed, and they're not being protected from themselves, essentially. And
exactly.
It's hard.
There's so many of those. I mean, I just saw a story recently. Now they're saying rather than sending cash, like Western Union or any of that, they're telling them to send Amazon gift cards.
You know,
I mean, they're going to find a way. So if that's the case, you have to think with your head and not with your heart. So if there were some things that you would tell people, those who are single, who are setting up online profiles, or even those who are just young and don't know, what are some of the things that you wouldn't put on your profile or that you would do differently?
Well, I would never, again, put that I was a widow. I would not really want to put that I was divorced, because I found out later that these guys are looking for new profiles, and they're looking for women and probably men that have been through some sort of traumatic event in their life, because that immediately makes you vulnerable to their kindness and their words and all that kind of attention. Again, sure. I would have someone help me with my profile, because I wouldn't put down that I owned a business or that I had any sort of, you know, means behind you. Although they probably think if you're in your mid-50s that you've had a career or something, so you've probably got some money stuffed somewhere. Because honestly, I took some of my retirement funds, which I never should have done. I mean, I knew better than that, but I did it anyway because he promised he would get it back to me. So just have someone that you confide in that you feel, you know, a good friend that you trust. Because my friends now come to me and say, what could we have said to you? What could we have done to have not let this happen? And I look at them and I honestly pushed everybody away. Everybody that told me not to do something, it's like a kid. The more they tell you no, the more you push them away and you want to do it.
And right.
One woman I was interviewed one time and she said, Deb, this had to happen to you because God knew that someday you would talk about it and you would make a difference and that people may listen to you because of it. And I can only hope that is true. Because sure. I don't want it to happen to anybody else. And I know it happens every day around us. But I just, if people can listen to my story and say, okay, so let me just check one little thing. Or, you know, if I let my brothers do a background check or something, I might have saved myself from this. But
he gave you addresses of where he was at, right? So how did you?
I knew hotels. Well, I even... I remember one time I wanted to send them a package. I wanted to send them I had a Bible that I wanted to send them, and I had a whole big package I overnighted to a hotel in Hong Kong. And it got sent back, and I started writing to the owner in the hotel, and I'm like, well, in room 305 or something is Eric Cole. And he wrote back. He goes, no, there's not. And I'm thinking, well, what the heck? So I said, Eric, you know, I just sent this package, and the guy wrote back and said, you're not there. What's going on? And he would always come back with a plausible answer, like, oh, I was there, and now I've moved over to my friend's house because I was running out of money. And, I mean, there are all these answers that if I had objectively looked at everything, then I would have said, oops, something's wrong here, you know, pink flag, red flag, whatever. But because right. I trusted him for 2 years, I wouldn't, you know, part of me questioned some things. I mean, I would go on to Google Earth and I would look at the addresses because I was an imagery analyst for the Air Force. I could look at the houses, I could look at the areas and try to see, you know, are those rooms, would those rooms fit into that kind of a house and that kind of thing. And whenever I got an answer back from someone that wasn't quite right, I would ask Eric about it and he would always have an answer. He'd always have a plausible answer as to why something didn't work. And, you know, I mean, if I were to look at my journals today, knowing what I know, I could probably see a lot of red flags. But when I was in right. the middle of it, my heart ruled my head. And I did not think that anybody could lie to me for 2 years.
Right.
I'm too kind, you know. I'm a really kind person. And I was devastated when it happened. It's hurt my trust in people today. I am much more skeptical about everybody. And that's a sad thing because, you know, we're here to help one another, not hurt one another. And,
right.
And it bothers me that there's so much evil out there that they try to hurt people on purpose. And that's part of life, but it's a sad part of life.
So let's talk about how did you, I mean, obviously now we started the show with who you are now. You're at the best point of your life. So you've climbed yourself out of that. But what were some of the things that you had to do to make the best of the situation and to get to where you are now?
Well,
that's a loaded question. Sorry.
I know. I had to own up to what I did. He wanted forgiveness, and the hardest person for me to forgive was myself because I had to get over that shame of what I did. And even my boys came, you know, they came unglued when they heard the story. Because I realized that I didn't trust them, and they were my protectors, at least in their minds. they were mom's protectors and they failed, which hurt them. Fortunately,
right.
that changed the way we talk to each other. Our relationships are so much stronger today because we're totally honest about what we're doing. And we don't let things, you know, my oldest is very much like me where he stuffs things. And I'm like, you need to learn to speak up, not in an angry voice, but in that still small voice where, you know, we can communicate. And so I've learned to be so much more honest with people. When CJ, my husband now, and I met, the very first thing I said is, we've got to be able to talk to one another when something comes up. If we feel uncomfortable about anything, don't stuff it. Don't hide it. And that's been very liberating for both of us because we both did it in our marriages before. So that's really what I was just thinking.
You were saying, you know, don't stuff it. And you had said earlier, well, for the 26 years you were married, sometimes you did stuff it.
I did most of the time I did. And I don't anymore. It's very interesting. Through all this process, I've found my voice again. Because when Lou died, I remember his best friend came to me and said, so who are you now? You know, you've been mother, daughter, wife, all these things, roles you've played. Who are you now? And I was sitting there going, I don't really know. I had to find me. And unfortunately, I found me through, you know, an adventure that I wouldn't want anybody else to go through.
Very costly, yes.
Very, but you know, I always think that my last suit has no pockets and I can't take that money with me. But I certainly have learned from the experience and I have grown in my own power, you know, my own inside fortitude has just grown tremendously from this. And I've found my voice and I'm willing to speak about it. And that's it. I've jumped out of airplanes with my daughter, I've gone parasailing with my son, my husband, I have walked on hot coals and eaten fire with my son. Things that people uh-huh. think are crazy, but things that I just said, I've got to find my own power. And if I have to do those nutty things, and the only thing I haven't done is bungee jump or I went across the Royal Gorge in Colorado and it just scares the death out of me. I don't know why. I have to get myself to be able to, you know, do something with that. But I've just found the courage to be me and to own up to what I did and then to use that bad that happened for good to help somebody else. That's my movement now, is to get men and women especially, because we tend to put up that mask of perfection and we hide. I want them to drop the mask, own up to a story in your life, be able to tell your kids something that you did that you don't want to tell them because you don't want them to think less of you. But I found my kids are so proud of me now for being able to go out and speak about this unspeakable thing. And once they realize that I could help somebody by talking, they are so excited for me. And to get your children's pat on the back is just amazing for a parent. Just amazing.
For sure. Definitely. So we've talked about the book, kind of. So let's talk about, how does someone get in touch with you? How do they find your book? And how do they book you for a speaking engagement?
Well, my book, my website is thewomanbehindthesmile.com. My book, you can actually get it from the website, or you can get it on Amazon in Kindle version or in print. It's called The Woman Behind the Smile, Triumph Over the Ultimate Online Dating Betrayal. It's not a very long book. It's not just about online dating. It's about figuring out who you are and really dropping your mask and bringing out your stories. And it's a phenomenal read, especially if you know me. It's like I'm telling you my life story, but in a very genuine way. You can reach me by calling me. I have an 800 number on my business website, or you can get a hold of me through the phone number on my website. But I love people writing to me, and you can email me at Debbie, which is D-E-B-B-Y, @thewomanbehindthesmile.com. I encourage people to open up a dialogue and talk. I'm also on Facebook. I do a Wednesday with the Woman Behind the Smile, and it's on my personal page and also on my Woman Behind the Smile Facebook page. So
I
I'm
love those
speaking,
YouTube. They're
I'm
great
looking for speaking
videos.
Engagements. Yeah, it's on
great.
YouTube too.
All
but
right.
I'm available anywhere, anytime.
And you said speaking engagements. You recently did a competition, right? How did that go?
I did. I entered the California Women's Conference, the 2017 California Women's Conference. They had a speak-off this year, which is a speaking competition. And I entered it kind of on a whim by sending in a 4-minute video. And I was selected to be of the top 20, and I ended up winning it. I won the whole thing, which is totally amazing
so
to me.
Cool.
Yeah, I was on the center stage. And that has actually opened up a hosting show. I'm going to be able to host a radio show starting in September and a potential television show starting in October. So
wow.
It's amazing. So I'm really looking for people that can be my guests, like you, and people that have stories that they've had a defining moment in their life, is the way I put it. You have this defining moment that's changed your life, and you're willing to step up and speak up. So that's what we're doing. And actually, I have a free download on my website. And again, it's thewomanbehindthesmile.com. If you go there, you can download the 7 steps to standing up in your power. And it's
awesome.
Geared initially towards online scammers, but it's for anybody that has had anything happen to them. And they really want to get that power back. And that stand-up series is what I based my Wednesday's videos on. And it's just lots of fun.
It is a lot of fun, and I love every week you bring a new letter, and you really make us think about what we're doing and what we're not doing. So I love that. So anyone who's listening, I invite you to find Debbie on Facebook as well as thewomanbehindthesmile.com. This is awesome. And I really want to say thank you for taking time out of your busy weekend to come to the show. I know we're not quite done yet, but I always forget to say thank you. So now's a great time.
Well, thank you so much, too, I'm so honored to be able to talk with you. We've had such fun dialogue. It's just great. So thank you.
It has been fun. One of the things that there are a number of things that I notice when I talk to people who have climbed themselves out of things. And the first, so I hear a lot of people talk about envision what you want of your life, right? And I say that with a little bit of, funny little voice, because a lot of times when you were going through even dealing with Leo dying and then having to deal with I've been scammed, both cases, I don't think at any point in there did you think that you were eventually going to be able to share your story and change people's lives because of it.
Not at all. And the one word I hate in the English language, well, there's actually two, but one of them, which is widow. I hated the word widow. And I was tagged with that as soon as Lou died. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to be part of that club. So I had to reinvent myself in some way that I could help other men and women who had lost a spouse, but I didn't want to be part of that club. I didn't feel single. I didn't feel married. I didn't feel part of anything anymore. That was really difficult because I'm very involved in church and family organizations. And all of a sudden, I wasn't part of the traditional thing. And actually that helped me in working with a lot of women in the past few years, because I've been able to be the platform, say, hey guys, Valentine's Day comes, don't advertise that this event is for, significant others and you, your spouse and you. I said, there are a lot of us that do not have a significant other or a spouse anymore, and you're keeping us from going to those events. So
Right.
put a new light on who we are. And you have to embrace families that are not as traditional as we think is right, or, that used to be perfect, because every family
so
can
true.
Be perfect if they choose to be and choose to be happy. And that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be happy with my kids. And, we've had troubles since this has happened, and we've gone through trials since, and I'm still dealing with some things with my youngest especially. But, all of our kids make choices, and you have to let them make their choices, let them live their consequences. I've realized that I can't do things to make things right for my son. He's in charge of that. And this is a whole other topic, because
yes.
I've become very, very honest and open about a lot of, the judicial system and addiction things and things that I never would have talked about before. I will open my mouth about any of those things now, because I'm not ashamed of what our family is going through. I have to learn about it. I have to deal with it. And then I want to help it. I want to
Right.
help with it. And again, those are many topics that we perfect moms never want anybody to know that's happening in our families. But
You're
sometimes
right.
you gotta ask for help and say, guys. And then what's amazing is that you're going to find people that are friends that are going through the same thing. and wish they had opened up to you, because together you can do everything.
Right.
It's amazing.
You're not alone in it. And I talk about that. I talked about it in my last show. I'll talk about it, I think, till I'm blue in my face, is life is not about everything goes perfect. And sometimes we think, well, once I find the perfect spouse, my life is going to be perfect and all is rosy in the world. And, or once I have a child, or once I have the second child, you know, I mean, we do that. Well, if I had the perfect car, things would be great in the world. And the reality is change is the only constant. Life changes
That's true. The time.
So
and
if we're putting
the change.
Exactly. Because that's the only thing we can expect. We can expect things to change. If you're listening today, that's, I think, the one thing I want you to come out of this is expect life to change. Expect that life won't be always the way it is right now. But that can be good, and that can be a little bit frustrating. It doesn't mean you're any less of a person.
Well, that's true. The only thing you can expect are death and taxes. And taxes every year and death, you know, I never expected Lou to die at such a young age, but it happens, and it happens every day. And you just have to be prepared for it happening today. Today might be our last chance. So the one thing I learned is to tell my family and my friends that I love them and I give them a hug every time I talk to them, because you just never
exactly.
know.
I can't tell you, I have had so many of my friends experience just that. And that's almost every time that's what I hear. Tell them you love them. Give them a hug every time you get a chance. That is so true. I don't know how more to stress that. I mean, it's so important. I try to make sure that my colleagues, my coworkers, that they know that I appreciate the work they're doing. And it's so valuable, because they might be looking for another job, or they might be questioning whether they have value in this world, and it's up to us to encourage them and let them know who they are. What they are is what brings value to us. So, all
and
right.
You will make them, they're much more valuable people once they know that they're loved, you know,
exactly.
Or liked, but especially your family.
For sure.
Life's too short.
All right. So on that note, let's just take a minute. You said you're a newlywed, so obviously good news happened with you. You found a way to trust somebody and to share. Having a great time, right?
Life is wonderful. He's my sweetheart. And we hold hands when we go walking. We hold hands when we're watching TV. We do as much together as we can. And I just appreciate him for everything that he does for me. And he does the same thing. It's just an amazing thing to start over in your mid-50s. But I had all the wisdom of being married for 26 years. He had 28 years. So between the two of us, we had a lot of years of good and bad. And we're choosing every day to make the best out of our marriage. And it's wonderful. I can't tell you how happy that I am that I've found another man in my life, and he's just perfect for me. So I am very happy.
That is awesome. So that is the way I wanted to end, on a happy note. So Change Hackers, you have been listening to Melissa Ruth, the host, with guest Debbie Montgomery Johnson on Coach on Fire Radio. Thank you so much, Debbie, for being on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I so enjoy talking with you.
Great. So anybody who wants to follow more of the future shows, the Change Hackers, find us on Facebook. The Change Hackers group is there, so you'll get updates on the show, who my next guest will be. And I just want to thank you for tuning in. This is Melissa Ruth, a Change Hacker and consultant, signing off. See you next time.
Bye, everybody.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.